the top players and legends to the very best analysts around the world from wherever the beautiful game is played. This is BTP. Now, we're talking football.
Yes, hello folks, welcome to the weekly Manchester United show on Beyond the Pitch. I'm the host as always, Phil Brown, joined with my regular co-host, Martin Warwick. Martino, how's things, mate?
Yeah, all good, mate. How about yourself, Phil?
All good, mate. All good. Just early show this week. Of course, United drew 2-2 with Chelsea in a brilliant game at the weekend. Cast my mind back to that particular podcast, Martin, when you were saying that you fancied United would get a draw. And I didn't. I thought they would lose. But I did say, if United get a draw, it's about how they get the draw. Yeah. That's a Manchester United in that second half that I will never criticise. That's what I want to see from Manchester United players. All in all, disappointing to get just a draw.
Well, yeah, I mean, as I said, I fancied us for a draw. I didn't fancy us for that type of draw. Yeah, you've got to walk away really a little bit disappointed. But it's the regular frailties that we've seen from this team, isn't it? It's set pieces and balls delivered from wide areas. It's just got that soft centre. Disappointing to give the goals away that we gave. But yeah, second half, man, that's... Well, you know, catch him up to the start of the game, that lineup came out, and I don't think there's many United fans who can complain at that lineup. I mean, okay, maybe, you know, Ashley Young, but it wasn't an awful lot of choice back there. But as an attacking team, it's what a lot of people have been crying out for some time. Certainly myself, and personally love seeing Juan Mata in the 10. If he's going to be a United player and he's going to have an impact, I just fail to understand why it's taken so long for him to go that way, because that's where he's at his best and was, you know, largely responsible for both goals.
Mata, you're absolutely right, especially the second one, Martin. My God, he was brilliant for that second one. But a couple of things I wanted to point out. When the lineup was announced, I had some concerns. It is obviously, as you said, a strong lineup, but the concerns for me were Smalling and Lindelof, which I'm never confident in.
But I think whichever two he names at centre back these days, there's never going to be a huge level of confidence, is there?
But I still think Bailly's the best defender at the club. I really don't understand why he can't get a new game. But okay,
yeah, I agree.
Fair enough.
Okay, as a partnership.
But you're right. You're absolutely right. I've often said this, and I will stand by this. I think there's a player in Victor Lindelof. I think there's a good defender in Lindelof. I just think Lindelof will be one of those players, if United sell him, will come back to haunt him in a couple of years, where he's going to develop into a top centre-back. United fans are going to look at it. He's going to be playing for some foreign club somewhere and go, we should have kept him. I think that every time I watch Will Zaha, I'm like, you know, United let him go too soon. Should have loaned him out. Magnificent player. I'm probably going to take pelters for that, but that's okay. The centre-back pairing, I must say, Ashley Young as well, they played very, 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 very well. And it's so frustrating, as you say, when United concede goals like from a corner. How many times have we talked about United defending in corners? That's Paul Pogba's fault. It's not Lindelof's fault. You don't push somebody on unless you're absolutely certain the defender has heard you and knows what he's supposed to do. If the corner's about to come in, you don't have time to push somebody on, you take that man. Pogba didn't track the runner, didn't track Rudiger. Rudiger scored, that's his fault. And arguably, he wasn't alive for the second goal either, where he stood static in the six-yard box. But not going to blame him entirely. But just disappointing to see United concede goals, because outside of the set pieces, as brilliant as Hazard was, Chelsea didn't create an awful lot.
No, largely shots from around the box. Obviously, De Gea made one great save. I thought we defended pretty well. I mean, Hazard's just... He's the informed player in Europe right now. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Ball's at his feet. It looks like something's going to happen every time he gets possession of the ball. United, obviously. Whereas last time they did a man-marking job on him solely Herrera, it looked like... This weekend, it was in certain areas of the field, whichever area he moved into, that player would pick him up and get tight to him. Obviously, kicks a few lumps out of him, which he's going to be needed to do. I mean, that's the way you defend players like that. You've got to get physical with him. But it wasn't a man-marking job given to one person. He kind of moved around, which I thought largely worked pretty well. Ashley Young had a great game. Had a very, very good game at right back. And like, yeah. As he deemed him, Hazard became somewhat ineffective. They did a good job. I thought Jose got his tactics spot on. And the difference was, certainly second half, they stepped 5 yards higher up the pitch. They pressed higher up the pitch. They pressed with more intensity. And when they won the ball back, the big difference to me was the pace that which we attacked with. Mm-hmm. There was less going backwards and sideways, and more direct running at the opponent, getting the ball in behind. Lukaku wasn't great, but Martial, you know, we both wanted him to see him start again after his goal. Goals and rewards, and again, we were two more goals. Rashford wasn't great, but again, he looks to make things happen when the ball's at his feet, and it just looked like a more confident, comfortable United team. Pogba seemed to thrive in that scenario too. It was enjoyable, and it was just enjoyable to watch United play at pace. Which we've it's happened a couple of times, hasn't it? It's coming from behind. The shackle seems to come off a little bit, and it's just a more enjoyable team to watch. And look how comfortable Chelsea were in the first half. One and two touch ball buzzing around. Jorginho was magnificent. Mm-hmm. And second half, completely thrown off the game. They looked all over the place. They looked uncomfortable. And it's just solely down to the pace of United. It wasn't anything that Chelsea did differently. It was what United did differently and the pace they injected into the game. And probably deserved to win the game in the end. But, you know, if you can't defend routine set pieces and balls from wide areas, it's going to hurt. I mean, the biggest disappointment for me is you look at the league table right now. There's a 24-goal spread in the goal difference between United and top of the league. 24 goals. I mean, we're not going anywhere with them kind of stats.
No, of course not. And we're not going anywhere. Every time United win a game, it's always a caveat. It's always, but.
It's a shame. I feel like wrongly so as well, because as disappointing as it is, we should be looking at the positives. Because if you would have, you know, we would have both, and so would every United fan.
Absolutely.
If you would have given us a draw, the way we were playing, the way Chelsea are playing, our record at Stamford Bridge in the last God knows how long, you would have taken a draw. But always disappointing to get it in that way, where just needed to see out 30 seconds.
Yeah, 30 seconds, and it's a perfect result. But look, let's just forget about the result for a second. Just look at the performance. How does a Man United, and this is what bothers me, because I feel United are a team that their performance is based on the level of the opposition. And that is unprofessional. Why can you not go out and do that against Brighton away? Why? Why do you go out against West Ham and be a shadow of that? Why can you not get yourself up for the Brightons and the West Hams? Because that's what you need to do to win leagues, Martin. The way United played yesterday in the second half would be in the title race.
Well, I'll take it one step further. Why can they not come out with that type of intensity in that game plan to press higher up the pitch and press with more intensity and get closer to, you know, the opposition? And the amount of times United won the ball back, you know, was a vast difference than what we've seen. You know, yes, they played somewhat counter-attack football. You see the percentage stats, you know, Chelsea doubled us up. But you know, possession is overrated a lot of the time. It's what you do when you get in possession. And people mistake counter-attacking football for parking the bus, winning the ball, and then attacking. No, counter-attacking football can be done 20 yards in the opposition's half.
Better believe it. The teams that 2007, 2008 was pure counter-attacking.
Pure counter, but it wasn't winning the ball back on the edge of our own box. It's winning the ball back higher up the pitch by pressing higher up, letting them have possession, and then winning the ball back and going at pace. And it was enjoyable. It was more reminiscent of what we expect from a Man United team. And say what you want about the squad, say what you want about the players there. There is the players in that squad to do that. That's how Martial wants to play. That's how Rashford wants to play. It's how Lukaku wants to play. It's how Pogba wants to play.
Well, we talked about this before the game, and we talked about the inconsistency of United. And this would be the biggest positive, you know, we should be taking from this is that this is a performance United should build on. Just like I hope they would do against City last season when they won away from home. You go, okay, there's something to build on here. Mm-hmm. And then I think it was Sevilla after that where United were absolutely dreadful. And it never amounted to anything other than a one-off performance. This is what it can't be. It can't be just a one-off where, oh, we can get ourselves up for Chelsea away, but we can't get ourselves up for the mundane games that United lose that they should be winning comfortably and are being outplayed in these games, that's unacceptable. We said in the podcast last week Anthony Martial had to start. Mm-hmm. He started the game and he showed why you keep Anthony Martial, why you move heaven and earth to get him under contract.
Yeah,
you know, he's often described as a Nicholas Anelka, and I think that's a really good comparison. He's young, sulky, but immensely talented, and Anelka never fulfilled his potential. If Anthony Martial can get his attitude right, and I have to say his attitude's been good, to be fair, this season, then you're looking at a footballer that an on-form Anthony Martial at his best, for me, I will take over an Ivan Perisic. Perisic's a brilliant player, but on-form Anthony Martial frightens the life out of anybody, and that is the best Martial. That is an Anthony Martial that United so badly need. That kid has the talent to be one of the world's best footballers. Whether he has the application, I don't know, but that was one of the major positives for me, was the performance of Anthony Martial.
Yeah, well, I've just always thought, you know, you can't ask a Rashford, you can't ask a Martial to sit 25 yards in his own half and then expect to get that kind of performance out of Anthony Martial. You know, to get the best out of a Martial, to get the best out of a Rashford, it's look, play if in a foot, play as a winger, get the ball, make things happen. You know, you got to have solid fullbacks, or you got to have a system where they're not having to drop so deep. You know, they don't want to be back there. They don't know what they're doing back there. And then they're picking the ball up 20 yards and a half. There's fullbacks and maybe wide midfielders in front of them, so they're having to beat two men. The ball's coming backwards. The amount of times you got one-on-one, that's what we want to see. We want to see Martial in a situation where he's one-on-one. Whether he'll go inside, whether he'll go outside, he's got a habit of that. The second goal was textbook Martial. He loves shaping that ball far post. We've seen so many goals of his from that exact position, shaping the ball far post across the keeper. That's where I want to see Martial, and that's where you're going to get the best of him. He's got a little bit of freedom and get the ball, run at that fullback. Run at that centre back. If you lose the ball, hey, we'll do the dirty work in behind you to win the ball back. But to get the best out of a Martial, likewise with a Rashford, they've got to start higher up the pitch. And I heard a lot of people, you know, social media looking, you know, oh, it's a back six again. It's a back six. Look where Martial, look where Rashford. Mm-hmm. If you look, and I never really do this, but those heat map indexes, and you know, and I never, because you know, I don't read much in them. But I'm like, you know what? I wonder if I saw something different. So I went on, I kind of researched a few of them. And if you look at the average starting position of those two, and you have these diagrams and graphs where it shows you the average position over the 90 minutes of each player was in the opposition half by about 10 yards. Now, that's a vast difference from what we've seen when we have played both those wingers. Mm-hmm. I'd pretty much bet on the fact that if you look back in those games, the average starting position was inside our own area. So stepping 10 yards further up the pitch, pressing higher up the pitch, giving those guys a license to run at the fullbacks and making them do their job instead of not having to worry about our attacking threat, there's a difference. It's a difference in mentality. It's a difference in attitude. Now the fear factor comes back slightly because now they're worried about us. And it was disappointing, but at the same time, it was so much more enjoyable, and it made for a cracking game of football in that second half.
It did, and you're quite right, Martin. I want to see my wide players on the back, on pushing their wing backs back and having them defend, asking your Martial and Rashford and Alexis Sanchez to stay at home and sit back. You're nullifying their strengths. We've seen Mourinho do this many, many times. I mean, Martial's had to stay home more than Julian Assange. I mean, sorry, that was a crap joke.
I think it's very important, Phil, that, you know, we both have our views on Mourinho, you know, and the way he sets us up.
Yes.
You know, at the same time, I'm willing to give the man credit where it's due.
Of course.
Tactically spot on. Let down. Well, hang on a second. I'll take that back in a second. Tactically very, very good. He got the majority of what he wanted to do from open play. He got it spot on. And the adjustments he made, and you know, obviously sliding Mata into the 10 net, and the way he allowed and where we set up was spot on. Now, we talked about Pogba on the first goal. Now, I have two different views on that. From first sight, from replays, it looks 100% Pogba. I just wonder what was said between Pogba.
But Martin, you're a coach. You know that if someone's going to take a quick corner or a corner, You don't decide at the last minute. You don't tell Lindelof. You track Rüdiger and go.
No.
That has to be decided before.
That's what I'll get onto.
Yeah.
Because as I spoke to you, you know, when I called you after the game there, after Mourinho's press conference, he said something very interesting that I've not heard a coach openly say before, and that was, the way we set up is it's a hybrid system back there on set pieces, mm-hmm. which clearly isn't working, by the way, because the amount of goals we concede,
yep.
where some players man mark and some players mark space. Now, you don't openly hear me, it happens, but you don't really openly hear people, it's usually man marking or it's space. You know, zonal or man mark. And he said it's a hybrid. So I just wonder, and I could be wrong here, I wonder if Lindelof was supposed to be marking space, and that's what Pogba had said. That's why Pogba was sorry. Because I just find it hard to believe that Pogba was so pissed off that Lindelof didn't track his runner. So I hope, as a coach, I hope that it was Lindelof missed assignment to mark the space rather than Pogba getting pissed off that he didn't, you know, right. Lindelof didn't take his, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's two different views. I thought it was interesting, you know, tactically how Jose's approaching that from set pieces, which clearly isn't working because God knows how many goals we've conceded from set pieces.
Yeah.
But I want to believe, and maybe I'm thinking too much into it, but I want to believe there was more to it than Pogba getting pissed off because Lindelof didn't switch off. Because there wasn't time to switch off. You're dead right. There wasn't time to switch off. Lindelof went and got his man. I just wonder if Lindelof was supposed to mark the space. And that's why Jose afterwards didn't really Jose likes to point fingers. And he'll tell you who missed. He didn't really say much. So I wonder if it was some confusion in that setup. Well, I guess we'll see. But still, we've got a soft underbelly. And regardless of what the tactics are, who was supposed to mark who, it is such a soft, sloppy goal to give away.
But here we're seeing things that are very un-Mourinho-esque. Why are United conceding goals the way they're conceding? That's very un-Mourinho-esque. United start very un-Mourinho-esque. That's not the Jose Mourinho that we know. Jose Mourinho's teams always start strong. They defend well. They're doing neither of those particular things. Of all the things that you can, if you say Mourinho's a defensive coach, okay, well then at the very least get your defense right. And so I'm looking at United and going, why are they conceding so many poor goals? It's simple goals, goals at this level shouldn't be happening.
What are we at now? I mean, how many are we at? 15, 16 goals conceded now, something like that? 16 goals conceded mm-hmm. in 9 games?
Yeah.
Almost 2 goals a game.
Yeah.
It's frightening when you've got the best goalkeeper in the world between the sticks.
I couldn't agree more. So I think that I don't think it's just a back four problem. I think Matic needs a rest. Let me ask you about Lukaku, Martin, and thank you to all of you who have tweeted us and asked us for some of the topics to cover. Yeah. I sincerely appreciate that. But I got a tweet there asking about Lukaku, and should Lukaku be rested and maybe give either Rashford an opportunity down the middle or Martial? Would you give Lukaku a rest? He looks like someone that badly needs a rest. So is Matic.
Yeah. Yeah, I think at this point, Lukaku, I don't know if it's his, I mean, we know he's a big boy. we interviewed him in the hospital. We know he's a big, but he just looks like he's carrying a bit of timber now as well. I could be wrong. I don't know. He looks a bit leggy, doesn't he? He does look a bit leggy, as Matic does too. And yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind that at all. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing, you know, Sanchez down the middle. Sanchez down the middle, Martial down the middle. I mean, if you play...
Is Sanchez better to play down the middle? Does he have a physical presence? He's Messi. Oh, off a striker, maybe.
He's Messi?
Well, I don't know if Messi plays down the middle.
I don't buy into it. I don't buy into the size thing whatsoever. It depends how you want to play. Look, being big enough and strong enough to...
I would say the same if I was you, man.
Yeah, you've been talking to my missus. Anyway, but look... you know, we know, you look across the road at Pep, you know, we know, I mean, Sergio Aguero's forced his hand. I mean, Aguero was nearly out of there because he can't really play in a fluid front three. Yeah. Aguero's a central striker, plays down the middle, can't really slide out left or right. And that's Pep. And when you can have that fluid front three, man, that becomes very, very dangerous. The interchanging, right across the front. A front three of Sanchez, Martial and Rashford, you know, you look at all three of them can play anywhere across that front three. It would be interesting to see. And maybe now is the time where we need to look at something else, because Lukaku has no out-and-out backup. So, I mean, the system has got to... If you want to give Lukaku a rest, the system has to change slightly.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Lukaku's a big target, man. You're not going to get leg for leg.
So it would be interesting to see, but I'm no means bashing Lukaku.
What if he gets injured?
Here's where it becomes a problem for me. If he gets injured, there's no tried and tested at this point.
Exactly.
Having said that, I mean, we saw all pre-season, take that for what it's worth, Sanchez was down the middle. I mean, so he's obviously having the idea. I mean, I think at the time he was only the only attacking player available. But, you know, it's Sanchez down the middle, Martial, Rashford either side. Take the brakes off those three, right? Then now defences have to think a bit, don't they?
Yeah. And to think at one time, Fergie felt he needed four. Obviously, you need to play two up front, but you need to have one legitimate out-and-out striker.
I wonder if Lukaku were to get a break or was to get injured. I talk about system changes. You know, we see 4-4-2 coming back into the game again.
Yeah, we can't play 4-4-2, Martin. So
I don't know.
We could not. We don't have the personnel to do it.
It would be a narrow 4-4-2.
Yeah, a narrow 4-4-2.
It would be a narrow 4-4-2, but a system would change. I wouldn't see us playing the system now if Lukaku got injured with any one of those front three down the middle on his own.
Let me ask you about the incident at the end of the game with Chelsea so we can move on from this topic. Marco Vianney, of course, has been charged by the FA. He celebrated twice in front of Mourinho, and I think he said something. Mourinho accepted his apology. To his credit, eternal credit, that Mourinho not only accepted his apology, but refused to discuss what was said and downplayed the incident. Mourinho himself acknowledged that he's made mistakes in the past. It's ridiculous that Mourinho's also been charged. I think he was fined. Clearly, Mourinho was the innocent party here. United didn't celebrate in front of Sarri or his assistants when they scored. In fact, Mourinho didn't celebrate at all. And then for the Chelsea fans, you classless, classless, classless pieces of shit. I'm sorry. That's the best manager your toy football club has ever had. In your 15-year history, he's the best manager you've ever had.
And they're in the Premier League. So Chelsea have won six top five titles.
Can you imagine?
Jose's won three
of them. Can you imagine a scenario where United fans would abuse Ferguson on the field?
United fans wouldn't abuse David Moyes if he came back to United.
It's absolutely disgraceful. Look, it's a football club, Martin. It's well known to have no class or standards. Mm-hmm. Look, whenever this is a football club, of course, who Rio Ferdinand they had no problems tapping up Rio Ferdinand, mm-hmm. and then of course the Chelsea fans booed him for being related to a guy their captain racially abused. That was his crime for standing up for his brother. Groundsman attacked Patrice Evra. Patrice Evra alleged racism against him too. Of course, he was found not guilty, but nonetheless, this is a football club with a long history of behaving with zero class. And so, what happened at the end? Chelsea should be embarrassed.
I got to say, I've been immensely impressed with how Sarri handled it.
I'm not criticizing. Sorry.
No,
he handled it well.
I think he was fantastic. What he said, I think he was just overzealous. I think he's a young coach. I was really happy with what Jose came out afterwards and said. And said today, don't ruin the guy's career. You know, he's a young coach. I've made mistakes.
A
line was drawn under it. And I just like the fact that the club's handled it. Don't really move on. Yeah.
Hold on a minute. That's great and all that, though. But how many times do we see clips of Mourinho running down the sidelines, shushing the Liverpool fans, or on his knees, or anything like that? This is carved into Mourinho's identity.
Well, look,
forgiving when it comes to him.
No, well, the major problem I have with it all is you look at the report afterwards. It's Mourinho involved in touch. Hang on a second. We know what the clickbait is. We know what drives the numbers. We know what moves the needle. You know, if they'd have led it with Sarri's assistant, it wouldn't have got any press whatsoever. It has to lead with Mourinho. And you know what? For all Mourinho's faults, I mean, how does Mourinho feel? How does Mourinho having to listen to that shit for 90 minutes and then just being abused for what he did at that football club? You know, it's a disgrace.
It is a disgrace. Chelsea fans should be embarrassed at treating a guy who's done so much for them. You watch how Ronaldo gets treated when Juventus come to United. You watch it. Now, you can argue whether that should happen or not based on the allegations that surrounding the guy. Some people won't give him that reception. But based on what he did for United, despite the fact that he came back, Cristiano Ronaldo came back to Old Trafford with Real Madrid, scored two goals, knocked it out of the Champions League, and still got a standing ovation. You think that would have happened at Stamford Bridge? Take a look at the way they handled going out against Barcelona. Didier Drogba, what such like. So, I'm sorry, but standards at these football clubs, the United wouldn't tolerate that, and I would hope that they wouldn't. And I don't think this guy should have his career ruined, but definitely should be reprimanded.
Absolutely.
So let's move on, Martin, because a couple of topics I want to get to before we go. I want to talk about Brexit and how that could be very well affecting how United go about their business, some important points. Before I get there, I want to talk about, of course, the game against Juventus. This podcast is being recorded on Monday, so some people will probably listen to this after the Juventus game. Looking at the United team, Alexis Sanchez looks like he's out. Some other doubts, of course, as well. What do you expect from United on Tuesday?
Well, honestly, it's we have these conversations, obviously, with these little preview shows, and it's going to be the same response to last week when you asked me the same question. I don't know.
I'd said exactly that very thing when I was asked on a podcast before this. Don't know.
You would hope they come out with the intensity they came out the second half. You would hope they want to press Juventus. You know, you would hope they want to go. Home games in Europe, you got to get a result. And by result, I mean you got to win your home games. Winning your home games affords you a little bit of a luxury to go away from home, play a little bit more defensive, take a point, and qualify from the group. But, you know, this group is going to be tight all the way. And I think, honestly, it's a game you've got to look to go and win.
Absolutely.
Scary the fact that, you know, you're looking at Costa, Dybala, Bernardeschi, Ronaldo. Front four there against a small in Lindelof. Yeah. You'd be concerned there for sure. They've got the likes of Pjanic, Matuidi, you know, protecting that quality centre back pairing of Chiellini and Bonucci. It's going to be a battle. I mean, it's going to be a battle. It's just a game that we've got to get on the front foot. United are so much better when they get on the front foot. If they want to concede so much possession, and you know, this is a team that's going to hurt you, isn't it? It's a team that's going to hurt you. It's with the state of our centre back pair and the state of defensively from wide areas. We know they've got quality in wide areas. They've got quality right down the middle. We have got to get on the front foot if we want to get a result from that. If we win this game, it really sets us up in the group.
Well,
hopefully, really kick on. Hopefully. We kick on from the weekend. Hopefully we don't go back to the same old thing we're used to seeing.
Hopefully you need to go out and put a performance in that they put in at the weekend. And that's a winnable game if they do. Now, Mourinho has already ruled out, of course, Phil Jones, Dalot, McTominay, Fellaini, Lingard. They were all absent from training on Monday.
Valencia as well, right?
Valencia. Well, Valencia is expected to return according to the notes here that I have. I don't know if he will or not, but Ronaldo will play, of course. Dybala overcame a minor injury, sustained during the international break. And Mario Mandzukic picked up an injury and will not play from what I'm reading here. So, expected lineups from United is De Gea, Shaw, Lindelof, Smalling, Valencia, Matic, Pogba, Martial, Mata, Rashford, Lukaku. I'm reading also Marcus Rashford's a doubt. I sincerely hope that's not the case, especially with Sanchez being out. That against the Juventus team, I think United and Juventus will end up matching up leg for leg in terms of system.
But
this is a Juventus team that played 9-1-8, drew 1, conceded 6 goals, scored 19. This is a formidable Juventus team, Martin.
Yeah, it is. They've got to work out from, you know, again, like I said, you can't sit back against teams like this. You can't let them dominate play and set the tempo. Got it on the front foot. Get on the front foot. Get out there, fullbacks. And, you know, so you've got to gamble a bit. You've got to gamble. So it's a game that we want to win at home. Then go over to Juventus, grab a draw over there. And you're above them in the group, aren't you?
Yeah, you need to have. I think if you need to win this game, they're in good shape, Martin.
I think so too. I think so too. And I hope that's the way that we're going to approach it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's you can't look at Juventus and go, okay, we'll throw them results away and we'll focus on the other two, because it's a group that's, you know, all right, young boys, you should be beating, but there's danger in that group. And just with the inconsistency of United, we've seen it all year long, haven't we? It's anyone can come to Old Trafford. The fear factor at all, Juventus are not coming to Old Trafford in any fear whatsoever of the occasion, of the venue, of the team. There's no Sir Alex Ferguson on the sideline. The fear factor's not there. They've got to get the fear factor back. They've got to get the intimidation factor back. We know European midweek games at Old Trafford are very, very good. The crowd are going to be in good voice. It should be in good voice, especially after the attacking display we showed. And if United got on the front foot early, they can make that place loud again and intimidating. And you know, that Stretford and will pull that ball. And you know what I mean? It's but fans crave it. They crave that attacking football at Old Trafford. We are patient there. I mean, they just can't watch that drab, boring, slow, lack of energy, lack of tempo. Get on the front foot. Get a high intensity, high tempo game. Pogba seems to come to life in those type of games. And you know, get Martial the ball. You know, get Martial the ball while he's confident.
Yeah, we will see what happens. Hopefully, you know, get a result in that game, get 3 points, be a big, big 3 points. Of course, Tom DeVantis, I don't fancy netted away from home. So like you said, you have to win your home games. I want to ask you about January, of course, because January is not that far away, and there's a lot of talk about whether United will buy or won't buy. How they purchased this summer was underwhelming for the most part, and I just wonder how much Brexit is affecting United, and not just United, but English clubs in general, and how they go about their business. When you look at the situation in the UK right now, there's just so much uncertainty about what's going on. Of course, the UK is going to leave the EU in March 2019. That's in the foreseeable future. That's still going to be this season. And there's still no settled legislation on what's going to happen based on the rights for EU citizens, non-EU citizens. When that Brexit vote first happened, because of the devaluation of currency, United had 80-something million, 87 million added to their debt.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Right, 87 million, which put United's debt at, went up 27%, and it put United's debt at 419 million. Now you're dealing with exactly the same situation of a potential no deal, which would have a horrendous impact on British currency. Now, most of the transfers are done in instalment agreements. Mm-hmm. If those instalments are in euros, though, all of a sudden the cost of these deals goes up dramatically.
Yeah.
Now, in 2016, for example, in Manchester Evening News were reporting that players coming to United didn't want to be paid in sterling, they wanted to be paid in euro because of the uncertainty of the currency. And because, obviously, if you're paid in pounds, it's going to fluctuate dramatically based on Brexit and how it's going to impact the currency. I guarantee you this is a factor in how United go about their business.
Absolutely.
So you're factoring in the income, you're factoring the interest, you're factoring in the cost, and also factoring in what's going to happen. There's supposedly been some legislation that exempts footballers from typical EU, non-EU rules that's going to happen after Brexit. But again, it's just so much uncertainty. Nobody knows what's going to happen to EU, non-EU citizens. Right now, I think it says, based on the rules, 25% of footballers in the Premier League right now would not qualify for a UK visa if Brexit happened. Martin, the way, if a no-deal Brexit happens, this is a serious problem for English clubs, and in January, this is going to be a major factor.
Well, which is not going to be the number one factor for United, that's for sure, isn't it? You know, it's a business. It's not. It's run that way. It's not a football club. It's a business, and you know, one eye has been on that probably for some time.
Definitely. It doesn't surprise me either, Martin, that we're hearing takeover rumours at the minute.
You are. Very good point. Yeah, it might be the one time that they might be able to cash in and get out and line their pockets even further. It's a concern. I until you brought it up, I hadn't really thought about the installment part of it. Deals are going to be. I would say that come January, any deals that are done are going to be structured very differently. I think they will have to be to avoid that uncertainty. But for sure, I mean, I wonder what that'll do to player wages. I wonder what that'll do to transfer fees. Will the bubble burst due to Brexit? Potentially. Will player wages, you know, I think it'll all be taken care of with just how the deals are structured. But for sure, there's going to be more than one eye on it, really, isn't it? There's going to be a huge focus on that. And, you know, United may well have missed the boat here and be financially handicapped even further because of this.
Well, when you take a look at how the governments are preparing for Brexit, so the Irish government, for example, a week or two ago, were holding these conferences all across the country, and they were offering businesses as much as $5,000 for legal advice on how Brexit's going to impact their business. There was money available for them to borrow to finance their businesses. There's contingency plans in place for a no-deal Brexit. None of that's happening in the UK. There's no conversations going on with businesses about what's going to happen in a no-deal Brexit situation. They denied that they'd even done an economic impact statement on how Brexit will affect businesses. And so now you've got these businesses saying, look, we're moving out of the UK because of the uncertainty. We don't know what's going to happen. Is there going to be access to a single market? What about freedom of movement? All these things that are fundamental to clubs that are floated on a stock exchange, that have debt, because obviously the debt's paid in dollars. So when you look at all these things, these are major issues that affect United. It won't affect City. They don't borrow money, therefore it's not an issue. But these are things United fans should be angry about. These are things they should be saying. Why is this football club being handicapped based on this? Because these magnificent owners,
the number one supported club in the world. The revenues.
This is the cost.
Top of everything, and then we're faced with this issue.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
This is what it costs to have someone own your football club whose only objective is to take money out of it and put the bare minimum in. And until United fans have enough of that, nothing's going to change. So I just wonder, Martin, I can actually see a situation where if there's no movement on this Brexit deal next month in November, I could see United sitting with their hands tied in January and saying, we aren't doing anything, there's just too much uncertainty. This is a squad that badly needs reinforced in January. It's just unless they
invest with the takeover already in mind,
or a domestic player like Harry Maguire or something like that, where is an English player.
Well, I think that's where the focus will have to switch, won't it? The focus is certainly going to. I mean, which kind of deems this massive European scouting network a little bit needless then. I mean, they are. That's where it's going to switch. The focus is going to have to switch to domestic players, English players. There could well be big changes. And like you say, we're one of the clubs that's going to be, if not the club, that's going to be most affected in Europe with Brexit.
Well, the pound has fallen as much as 20%. Against some currencies. So immediately, as soon as you buy abroad, that's a 20% tax added. So United are too savvy financially. And I just think that profit dictates everything you need to do. Everything. And so I just think that they're going to err on the side of caution, like a lot of businesses will. If in January, and we'll know if we're going to get a no-deal Brexit by January, I think a lot rides on what United will do in January, on what happens with the British government and the EU. And then there's an acceptable solution about movement, freedom of movement of people, and get some sort of security for businesses so that they can invest properly and then you get a settled market. But until then, Martin, businesses in the UK are in serious, especially international businesses, there's so much uncertainty right now. Nobody knows what's going to happen, and this is massive. This is constitutionally or legislatively the biggest thing to happen in the UK since World War II. This is such a massive this is going to change Britain dramatically. So I just think this is something that clubs will be taking into consideration. And unfortunately, I don't think we'll see any signings in January.
I mean, I'm glad you brought it up. It's, I think, a lot of myself included. I'm not ashamed to say it. Wouldn't really have considered it. Yeah. You know, you're blindsided by you know, buying and selling and incomings and outgoings and, you know, and transfer windows. I don't think enough people would have even considered mm-hmm. that being a factor, you know, to that extent. And you know, it's a great point. I'm glad you brought up because, you know, you got to open your eyes to it. It's a business. And, you know, it's going to have to follow business rules and the impact it's going to have, you know, it's... Let's make no bones about it. It's going to massively affect and it's going to drive and determine what we do from here on out.
I agree. At a time when the English clubs are already at disadvantage over moving the stupid window forward, hopefully United and other clubs repeal that immediately. Mm-hmm. They don't need another disadvantage. We shall see what happens. So much to talk about. Before we go, Martin, we mentioned the Saudi takeover last week. We talked a little bit about it. More headlines in the papers this weekend and Sunday newspapers. Do you think there's anything in it?
Well, I think there's always going to be people knocking on the door. I think the people, the only people with cash available and the amount of money it's going to take for a United takeover are people in that area of the world. Oil money is some of the only money that's going to be able to take over a club of United size. So is there anything? I don't know. Probably it could well be a slow newspaper day. It could be a slow press day. But there's always going to be people floating around. And like I say, it's going to come from that area of the world because that's where the money is.
The Glazers were definitely attend an investment conference in Saudi Arabia. Because I think
and we know they're shameless. They don't
think it was Avram Glazer was listed on the website and his profile was listed on the website of attendees. So I can't remember which one it was. I think it was Avram or I can't remember. It was one of them. But anyway, they were definitely going and United have announced in the past, of course, ties to Saudi Arabia. And I think $4 billion for United. There's a lot of people in the world where that's chump change. Where United are actually relevant. It wouldn't surprise me to see someone like an Amazon or a Facebook go and try to buy a Manchester United and use it as someone to launch streaming platforms.
Launch the streaming. With it. And, very good. Interesting.
And depending on who buys it, Martin, I think if your business owner, just to wrap us up, they're looking at United, they'll be looking to end collective bargaining. Make no mistake about it. They'll be looking at United saying, we need a La Liga deal where there's no collective bargaining. However, in Holland, for example, PSV and Ajax are sharing their Champions League revenue with the rest of the clubs in the league so that they can have a better competitively balanced league.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible. In England, we have the opposite. We've got clubs.
No chance that would happen.
We'll see what happens. Folks, we'll go ahead and leave it there. Thanks to all of you who download the show. Please subscribe to the show. Folks, we've been adding a lot of new shows to BTP. If you have no interest in the other content, tweet us and let us know because we're trying to decide what to do with it, whether to separate it on its own platform, whether to keep it all under one umbrella. There's a lot of different, it's shows cover very different content to what we cover. So let us know what you want us to do with that. If you'd prefer we separated it out, we will definitely do that. Thanks, Martino, as always.
One thing.
Yep.
I want to keep an eye on this Patrice Evra, Ed Woodward. Just keep an eye out. Is he being tipped for a director of football role?
I wonder.
Is he just sat next to him? It seems like he's a little bit of a coincidence now. More than one occasion, they seem to be pretty pally right now. So I wonder if there's something in the cards there.
See, that would be a perfect Woodward appointment. Patrice Evra, director of football, based on what?
Yep.
How would you know that he would be a good director of football? Because he used to play.
Yeah, I get a feeling he's being lined up for some kind of role.
Yeah, see, that's a perfect example of an Ed Woodward hire. I like you. You're a bit good. You'll do.
Stay tuned. Let's see what
happens. Folks, we'll leave it there. Martino, all the best as always. Phil. I hope you're all well, folks. Mate. And thanks to all of you for the downloads. Follow my co-host here at MWallwork7 on Twitter, please. And if you could, give us a like on Facebook and all that. Beyond the Pitch on Facebook.
Cheers, Phil.
Cheers, Martino. Thanks, folks. Bye-bye.